It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio. Jason, you're looking at me like I'm crazy. You okay? Everything good? All right.
No, iHeartRadio.
Michael Lombardi, still to come this hour. Got some football questions for him. Brady Cannon on the Arnold Palmer Invitational and how he felt about Colin Morikawa's victory last week. By the way, Dewey Decimal System, just to answer your question, was invented by a gentleman named Melville Dewey. He ended up resigning from the American Library Association due to, you ready for this trifecta? Allegations of sexual harassment, racism, and anti-Semitism in 1905.
Wow.
Should have taken his decimal system with him.
That's dark history there with the decimal system.
There you go. We went down a rabbit hole we didn't even expect to. Let's bring him in. He writes an article for Point Spread Weekly each and every week with all of his random thoughts on futures and other sort of things alike. Ladies and gentlemen, from under a cloud of smoke in Southern California, it's Jason Weingarten. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. I'm just trying to imagine how racist you had to be to get fired in 1905.
That's a great point. Absolutely. It's a great point. Sounds like just a horrible human. I apologize to his ancestors, but look, if he did those things, he should have resigned. He should have been fired. The other reason I wanted to have you on is because I was talking with Wes Reynolds the other day about the Golden Globes, and I was making a comment, and you texted me about this, and I was saying how none of that night, first of all, there was tons of upsets in the betting market in terms of what won, and part of the reason for me was, like, I couldn't believe, like, the stuff that I had watched that won the Golden Globes, I was like, how in the heck did this win? Like, so, I care a lot. The young lady who won
was
awful. I called it the best, most awful movie I've ever seen. And the reason I said best in front of that was because the conceit was great, right? The idea was great. I didn't know that this kind of exploitation of the elderly, if you had one corrupt doctor, is a thing. But apparently it could be. So I thought that was an interesting premise. But God, was the acting terrible. And God, was it over the top. I can't believe she won. And then Borat, who I love, right? I love the character of Borat, but what Borat subsequent movie film, like, I had trouble getting through that. And that one, you felt the same way about both.
Yeah, I thought I Really Care a Lot fell apart the final act. It was good for a little bit, and then it just kind of went nowhere. Borat was probably even worse. I just think Golden Globes is sort of a pay-to-play sort of award show where the studios are paying for the awards. There's just no way that anybody would vote for those unless they were getting paid. Like, those were just awful movies. It was a bad year for movies, too. But.
Yeah, I'd love to dispel a theory like that, but I'm not sure I can this week. I really don't. Okay.
87 journalists vote for the Golden Globes. Sorry.
87.
A pool of 87, yes. Where it's almost 10,000 vote for the Academy Awards.
Yeah. 87. And as Borat said, I'd like to thank the all white Hollywood Foreign Press, as a joke, obviously, talking about shedding light on some of the things that were in the news prior to the run up to this year's Golden Globes. All right, Jason. So, Point Spread Weekly, you talk about different things every week. First of all, before we get into that, yesterday, let's talk about something we never do, an exhibition baseball line. The Dodgers and Giants ended up playing to a 1-1 tie. Why were the Dodgers such a muted favorite? Did you ever get to the bottom of that? Why they were only like -125?
No, I don't know. I saw it closed like -144, which was a little more reasonable, but I mean, I just kept looking at the line, and you were getting two innings of Walker Buehler and two innings of Dustin May to start. And, you know, Mookie Betts and I think Seager were in at the top of the lineup, too. I'm not sure if Seager was in, actually. I know Betts was. It was just short. I didn't understand why the game would be that short, even on a seven-inning game. You know, Dodgers had to score a run there at the end to make it competitive, but... You know, it was a lot of work for a tie, really,
yeah.
at the the end of it. It was a lot of work betting that to get a tie.
Ends up a push for everybody. As Jason said, Dodgers score late, 1-1. I guess the question, it begs the question when you see something like that. But by the way, just a reminder, it's Gil Alexander, Jason Weingarten. This is a numbers game at VSiN, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo Sling Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio, talking all things sports betting with Jason Weingarten, professional sports bettor. At Spreadopedia is where you can follow him on Twitter. Does something like that, that is so peculiar, a line like that, because they were like minus 200, north of 200, I think, the day before, if I'm not mistaken, you'll correct me if I'm wrong on that, but such a different kind of line, does that make you more or less likely to want to bet it?
You know, a spring training game like that, where the line tends to look lower than it should be, I had a bad feeling all day that it wasn't going to be an easy win.
Yeah.
So I tend to not try to overbet these games. You know, it's still early, so there's no reason to get involved in a spring training game for, you know, double or triple what you would normally bet. I just try to keep it relatively consistent. And, you know, if they'd lost, it wouldn't have hurt that badly. It was a good bet. I'd do it again. Might bet Dodgers again today.
That was my bet Dodgers again today. Yeah, that was my reaction yesterday. I was like, oh, I really want to bet this. Do I really want to bet this? Like, you know, the kind of the second thought in your head is, what don't I know here that's happening? Okay, your Don Alvarez, part of your Point Spread Weekly piece. A lot of focus on him. I have him 40-1 to win the Major League home run title this upcoming year. You're buying a lot of his cards, and you're bullish on him in general.
Yeah, I like him for the home runs. I bet that too. I'm interested betting him to win MVP. I think it's a little short, like 30-1. I'm interested betting him most RBIs. I just don't like the idea. You know, if I'm gonna bet say $500 on each one of those, I'm being to Yordan for at least $1,500 before the season starts, and it's more likely that I lose all three and that he. You know, he might be in the top five in home runs. He might be in the top five in RBIs. He might, you know, be an MVP candidate, although I'm skeptical that a DH is really going to be an MVP candidate. So I have been buying his cards. I bought a couple Gem Mint 10 autograph rookie cards of his to hopefully speculate on. And I mentioned to you, I think I sent it to you yesterday, there was a piece on Yordan Alvarez in Fangraphs by Ben Clemens.
Yes.
Who wrote about why Yordan is one of the top five hitters. The only problem is his entire MLB career has been 89 games over, you know, halves of the last two seasons, and it was still good enough to win Rookie of the Year in his half of 2019, and he played like five games last year. So there's not a lot of, you know, tape out there. There's not a lot of info, whatever. I mean, there is info, but 89 games is his whole career. I think there's a lot of upside to his cards. I think there's more upside in his cards than in a lot of the betting markets, because like I said, he can be a top five guy in any category and not necessarily win. So I've been buying up his cards. I got a couple real nice ones, and hopefully I'll get a couple more before the prices skyrocket.
Have I asked you this on, I know I haven't off, but have I asked you this on air? Obviously the thing that everybody's into now is these NBA Top Shots and the digital version of the baseball cards, basically that you're talking about, what we grew up on, sports card collectibles. Now it's all in digital form. The NBA is behind it. Do you have any interest in participating in that?
No, not really. It kind of feels like a Ponzi scheme to me. I don't really like Ponzi schemes, so I'm not in on Top Shot. I had the opportunity and I passed on it. So, you know, I'm happy that many of my friends are making a lot of money, but I'm skeptical that they're all going to cash out and be rich. So I'm just sort of waiting and watching. If they make an MLB version, I'd probably get involved, you know, just out of curiosity. But no, I don't think it's something that I'm going to put money or time into unless somebody else wants to fund it all.
I feel 100% the same way about all of that. What you just said.
I have a lot of other habits and collections to keep me occupied already.
All right. What else in the Point Spread Weekly piece did you seize on this week?
Well, I'm not done writing it yet. still. So I'm still going over rookie of the year stuff, and we now have odds at FanDuel, DraftKings, and Westgate, which is very interesting because now, you know, I can compare three sets of odds, and there's three sets of odds, and at least two sets of them, they have absolutely no clue what they were doing and rushed to put them out, you know, and there was no reason to. I mean, Westgate put them out early and opened. Andrew Vaughn, 100-1, down to 10-1. I mean, why not just wait and put out good numbers instead of, you know, putting out stupid, idiotic numbers like they did? You know, I'd love to ask them that, but there's just every set of odds I see, and it's not just a Westgate thing. Don't think I'm just taking it out on Westgate. I mean, DraftKings put up numbers with Devin Williams, who's not even eligible from last year, and it took them over 24 hours to take it down, you know, even after they were notified about it multiple times. It's just really unimpressive work across the board, I would say, from a lot of these different books putting up numbers. And that's a lot of what I'm writing about is, you know, I've talked to you about it. I haven't said so much on air, but you know, the numbers across the board. And again, I'm not singling out any book. I'm just saying that, like, Cody Bellinger's 8-1, Corey Seager's 15-1. And we already know Corey Seager is the World Series MVP, is NLCS MVP. He's batting ahead of Bellinger in the lineup. Bellinger's coming off shoulder surgery. I mean, it's clear that nobody making these numbers actually cares. And they just don't think they're going to get a huge handle because these numbers don't make any sense. And again, like I said, it's not book specific. It's not just Westgate. It's not just DraftKings. It's almost all of them are just putting up numbers riddled with errors. And it's disappointing to see because it's just like, how lazy are you?
Well, it's interesting because it's a double-edged sword, right? Like, on the one hand, if there weren't inefficiencies, you'd have nothing to bet on, right? That's the first thing.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Sure.
But two, what do you speculate? Do you think that's a baseball specific? Like, what is it about baseball that makes that the case? Because we wouldn't see this in football, right?
No, I don't think you'd see this in football. I just think that the reality is the handle on some of these season long markets is so low that you could afford, you know, if you're somebody hits you for $15,000 on something at a high number, it sucks, but it's not going to ruin your season. I also, again, just point out one of the other things I'm disappointed about is that the lower you go on the odds at various sports books, like Westgate, for example, again, I see some 125-1s on the longest long shots, guys who probably aren't going to win, but I don't see very many. I think I see four guys across both NL and AL rookie of the years that are over 100-1. When I bet Yordan Alvarez 2 years ago, he was 200-1.
Yes.
They really dejuice these odds year after year. They just don't want to give you good action, and they lowered the limits. I mean, when they opened these odds, it was max win $10,000, which again, $10,000 is a lot of money. Don't think I'm, you know, laughing at winning $10,000. I love winning $5,000, $10,000, whatever. But a $10,000 to win limit, I mean, offshore PPH books will give you 50, you know, and you know, Westgate could give you whatever reason they want, but $10,000 to win limit on a baseball futures market, like, you could do better than that. We know you could do better than that. That's just weak.
Jason Kahn, you have a Andrew Vaughn that was capped at 10K?
Yes, absolutely. 60-1, but capped at 10K.
Well, he's 10 to 1 now at Westgate. So
yeah,
at least we got some value there, which again was what I was saying is, why were they even opening him at 60-1? You could have waited a week and put up a good number and not have been exposed, you know, and I guess they're just probably laughing it off, saying whatever, $10,000, big deal, they don't care. But I mean, some of these numbers are just awful. They're just awful, and I could spend an hour telling you why each one of these numbers is just embarrassing. But
is there another, you know, sport? By the way, Andrew Vaughn, 3-run jack yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, in exhibition baseball. Is there another sport where you tend to see that, Jason, across sports books? Where you just find that it's not nearly as researched as it ought to be?
Not really. You will see with NFL futures, and not so much team players, more player futures. You'll see, like, between FanDuel, DraftKings, Circa, they might have a completely different number. Like, when I bet Kevin Stefanski to win Coach of the Year, I got 45-1 at FanDuel when he was 7-1 at Circa. So a lot of times you'll see books with different opinions on football. But I mean, when it comes to these baseball numbers, it's really hard to say anything other than a lot of these books are just pulling these numbers out of their asses. Like, yeah. these are made up. These are just absolutely made up. And I can just go through them. Like Trevor Story is 25-1 to win MVP on a 65 win team. Like, where are you getting these? You should be 125-1. Yeah. You know, you might as well have paid me $700 an hour to tell you what to do, because this is just, these are dumb. Like, these are just bad numbers. And I really wonder in this day and age, when you have so much competition, what the incentive is to put out bad numbers.
That's
how I see it.
With the muted ones, right? With the muted ones, like the 25-1, and you're saying capping some of those rookies at 125-1. And you're right. Yordan Alvarez was 200-1 when he came out. Casey Mize that same year, by the way, that didn't work out, was 200-1. But there was lots of 200-1s, and that was just a few years ago. That was like 2 years ago. And so with a lot of books, I think, that cap those, they're just not as – I mean, I don't think I'm out of bounds in saying, but probably just not as flush with cash, or they're just – they can't deal with the exposure that other spots can. I think that's a fair comment. And it is what it is, right?
Losing a bet at 200-1 sucks. You know, yeah. You have to pay it out. It's not fun. I get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, de-juicing these markets is just a weak way to get around, you know, not making good numbers. So I get it, but it's weak. And, you know, I expect more from billion-dollar books.
Yeah.
Million-dollar books.
It's always fascinating, Jason. Always fascinating. Anything else NFL that you bet since the last time we spoke, or have you started to look elsewhere?
Nothing yet. I did see Chris, Chris Bookmaker put up some props on the draft, but their limits, it's like the max win was like $1,000 or $997 or something. So I wasn't super excited.
Yeah, let's be fair. Since this is the only show you'll get this on, because for as much as we tend to, you know, we can spot things about legalized jurisdictions, books in legalized jurisdictions that we have qualms about. Let's take a spot like Chris and Bookmaker, who of course is, you know, one of the market makers globally, and a spot that we over the years can't really say that much negative about. But wouldn't you even say, and you just alluded to one thing in terms of capping some of those futures, wouldn't you say that they, over the last, in recent memory, have kind of gone backwards too? Like, not only the capping of stuff, but also just the breadth of the menu seems to have narrowed. Am I exaggerating that? Because I think I've noticed that.
No, you're totally correct that the depth of the market they offer, the futures, has gone down significantly. The limits have gone down. You know, and it's stuff like I've had this conversation with a lot of people. A lot of the small market stuff, it's you have very little incentive to make a market on it, because you're just going to get hit with sharp stuff over and over and over. I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Chris has really come down in quality and come down in limits, and it's unimpressive. It's, you know, there's a lot more unimpressive stuff in the sports book world than impressive stuff these days. And it's a lot more noticeable too, that, you know, books are shying away from sharp action or sharp customers, or, you know, giving you anything of value essentially.
Even at the sharp spots themselves, that's the thing. It'll be fascinating to see how it evolves. You know, here in Nevada, it's one ecosystem, and again, we've talked extensively here about that with its own sort of narrow confinements, and then We do see at other books elsewhere a large menu, right? DraftKings has large menus in other jurisdictions. There are some negatives to be said about straddles and that kind of thing, but at least the offerings are there. So it'll be fascinating to see how this evolves. And if I were just to ask you in closing here in 60 seconds, Jason, how you think this goes generally, do you think it gets better, ER I'm talking about, or worse? Or can you not make a sweeping statement? It's going to be, you know, better some spots and worse in others.
I think it'll get, I think it'll get better in some spots and, like you said, worse in others. I think there's going to be a lot of consolidation in the future. You're going to probably end up with maybe 3 or 4, maybe 5 companies that really control the entire market nationally in the long term. And I think either the Vegas books are going to buy into the national books, or the national books are going to buy into Vegas, because having two different ecosystems isn't gonna work long term. It's gonna eventually force Vegas to go national.
I agree.
So, yeah, I agree. You know, it's a very interesting sort of time period right now, because you have all these companies kind of fighting with each other for customers. That's great. I appreciate having 5 different sets of futures to look at personally.
Yeah, and we appreciate you coming on all the time, Jason. It's always fascinating, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'll be back soon.
Jason Weingarten, Point Spread Weekly writer, weekly column on his futures and all his thoughts at Point Spread Weekly. Nobody quite like Jason. By the way, my favorite part about that is when he said earlier, I was asking him about Top Shot versus baseball cards. He's like, I don't really like Ponzi schemes.
It's kind of the first one that we've had on with that response.
Oh, dude, you know why I'm not involved. I'm right with him. We'll come back. Brady Cannon on the Arnold Palmer Invitational and what went on last week. Coming back right here on The Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Back on A Numbers Game, brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. It is Gil Alexander, and it has become a bit of a tradition these days. Ladies and gentlemen, live in studio on a Wednesday, the great Brady Cannon. How you doing, Brady?
I'm good. We're, I think it's 36 days away from a tradition unlike any other.
But who's counting? 36
yeah.
days.
Not that I'm excited or anything.
Love it. How great is this time of year? March Madness, and we're getting to March Madness this year, quickly followed by the Masters. By the way, there's a Miami Open tennis tournament in there. That's pretty awesome. And then NFL Draft.
Right.
Derby, if you're still into those kind of things.
I said that with Wes Reynolds on the Lombardi Line on Tuesday, March is basketball month.
Yes.
But April is baseball, the Masters, and the NFL Draft.
Agree.
Who says we need football?
Well, they'll believe
there's always football going on. Well, like I said, the draft, right?
I was going to say, I'll talk to you in June and July. You'll be like, football, get here. last week, before we get to this week, WGC, you call it the WGC at concession. Is that
at the concession?
At the concession. Can you explain to people? You just told me off air a great story. Why is it called the concession?
Yeah, you know, this is the first time we saw this course on the PGA Tour, and it made for a very difficult handicap. Colin Morikawa kind of came out of nowhere for a lot of people. He hadn't been in great form. But the last time we saw this course was in 2015 for the NCAA Championships when Bryson DeChambeau won. Relatively new course in the golf world, but called the concession, a collaborative design between Jack Nicklaus and Tony Jacklin. Tony Jacklin, a great golfer from England. And they got together on the design, and they came up with this name, the concession. In 1969, in the Ryder Cup, of course, United States against Europe, Jack Nicklaus conceded about a 3-foot putt at the very end of the match to Tony Jacklin. Didn't make him putt it. And that forced a tie for the Ryder Cup. The U.S. could have won if he missed the putt. Jack said, no, it's good. And later, now so many years later, they built this golf course together and they called it the concession. And back then in 69, it was thought as the ultimate example of sportsmanship by Nicklaus. So pretty cool that they carried that over and named this course
that's
that
awesome.
Way.
Yeah. It's a great story.
I thought it was awesome too.
So Colin Morikawa ends up winning by 3 strokes, 18 under for Morikawa. 3-stroke win over Hovland and Koepka and Horschel. Horschel got in there as well. Great performance. I talk about in tennis, as you know, Brady, a lot about how I think the game is now shifting, right? Ever since Serena won a slam, her last slam, her 23rd slam when she was pregnant. Ever since then, the ladies' field has been just wide open.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe now, some 3 years later, I believe it's 3 years, where we are now seeing a shift where Osaka is the one to beat on hard courts, but my girl Iga Swiatek is the girl, I think, who's going to be number one in the world. And so we're seeing a shift where now there are two players that are emerging. When you look at golf, and here we are in a moment in time at the beginning of 2021, and there's so many great players in the world. But if I had to say to you right now, okay, give me one or two of these younger guys who you think might actually emerge from the pack, is Morikawa
right there at the top
of the list?
And it's Morikawa and Hovland.
Wow.
Hovland has been red hot. I think he finished second at Torrey Pines, finished second here. But we talk about the Ryder Cup with Jacklin and Nicklaus. There's a couple of Ryder Cuppers right there, one for Europe and one for the USA, that could have some duels in the future. Morikawa, at 24 years old, he's the only guy to ever before the age of 25, other than Tiger Woods. He and Tiger Woods have won a World Golf Championship and a major before the age of 25. Morikawa, I know he ascended to fourth in the world. He may have gone up to number three in the world, but I mean, obviously inside the top five very early in his career. This guy, he was number two in strokes gained approach last year. Number one on tour was Justin Thomas. This year, I believe Morikawa has moved to the number one spot. He's right there again in the top five. But the point is that metric is a measure of iron play. He's a fantastic iron player, probably the best in the world right now. And he was struggling with his putter. I mentioned that we didn't really see this win coming for him. We were trying to figure out how to handicap this golf course that we hadn't seen before. It's a Nicklaus design. So does it match up? Is there a correlation with other Nicklaus designs? Who plays well in Florida? It didn't really, you know, Morikawa didn't really jump off that page from that handicap angle. And he'd been struggling with the putter. The week prior at Riviera in the Genesis Invitational, he's trying this new putter grip and whatever because he just really couldn't figure out the flat stick. And I think he was last in the field in strokes gained putting. And here he comes out the next week, gains strokes on the green with the flat stick, wins the tournament. And like Tiger, where he owns that, you know, WGC major thing, he was unflappable on Sunday. I'll tell you another little story on the other side here about Colin Morikawa and his prowess to get it done and to close like we've seen with Tiger Woods in the past.
Yeah, already winner of a major, won the PGA, of course, this past year.
Cal Bear,
that's right. It has the right temperament for all of this, for sure. We'll get Brady's thoughts. He'll continue his thought there and his thoughts on the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Get you some golf picks coming back right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, we're on top of all the sports on today's schedule, as well as the future impacts of NFL trades, free agency, and draft choices to help you become a sharper better for every game on the board. Not about just picks and predictions, but oh, the golf picks and predictions. We'll give you the analysis and insights you need to become a smarter better on every sport. The best handicappers in the business are here giving you the tools you need to create your own betting engine right now. For only $50, you can put our experts to work for you all the way through the College Hoops Finals. Get everything we offer, including our members-only daily best bet emails, point spread weekly guides with up-to-date power rankings, the upcoming bracket betting guide, and of course, all access to Visa.com. Sign up today to get everything we offer through the end of the College Hoops Tournament for only $50 at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Brady Cannon, kind enough to join us in studio. He hosts the Lombardi Line at the top of the hour. Brady, your final thought on Morikawa you wanted to...
Yeah, it was an interesting comment that I believe was Brandel Chamblee of the Golf Channel made after the victory. And we saw it on Sunday to the point he was making. And this kind of correlates with Tiger and that record he shares with Tiger. And Chamblee said, when Tiger was in the lead, the chasers that were trying to catch him did not put pressure on him. He put the pressure on them. And we saw that same thing Sunday out of Morikawa.
Mm.
And it was very few times, and I believe your colleague Matt Brown mentioned this on Twitter, that I want to say four out of the last 24 times the 54-hole leader went on to win the tournament. So that the chase is putting pressure on that leader, right?
That's right.
Not so with Morikawa. He got it done. He was the 54-hole leader, and he didn't let these guys in. He dropped a shot the very first hole, but after that, it was almost over.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt mentioned that on Primetime Action, that stat. 4 out of 24 who lead the third round end up getting home, I believe it is. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So very few can hang on.
Yeah.
But Morikawa is a different breed, I think.
I buried the headline, Brady. So I've said this multiple times, both on Primetime Action and on A Numbers Game, which is VSiN's collective golf picking prowess. Can I say that phrase? Has been just outstanding. And it's unbelievable how many outrights between you and your co-host on Long Shots, Wes Reynolds, Matt Eumanns, Matt Brown, the four of you guys collectively, and we'll even throw in Kelly Bidlin's doing great too. All you guys, the rate at which you are hitting outrights, my instinct is to say to everybody, hey, guys, like, look, they can't do this every week.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to wonder if you guys can. Wes just hit Puerto Rico last week.
Yeah, Wes hit Brandon Grace in Puerto Rico at 20-1. He's getting closer to the continental U.S. He hit one on the European Tour as well. Paul Casey a few weeks back. I think that was January 31st. I started the run. If you go to the 2021 season, I actually started with DJ at the Masters. But here in 2021, proper. I started at the Sony with Kevin Na, and then Wes won with Casey in Europe, and then Eumanns won back to back with Daniel Berger at Pebble and Max Homa at like 70-1 at Riviera, and then of course Wes hit Brandon Grace on the alternate event in Puerto Rico last week. So 5 out of the last 7 weeks, and now the pressure's on in Orlando this week.
Yeah, Matt Brown had Homa too. He also had Sam Burns in that tournament, so he had to settle for Matt.
Oh,
Homa.
That's right. I knew he had Burns. I didn't know he had. I didn't know he had Homa as well.
Oh, yeah,
nice job.
He settled for the Homa win.
Let's see. It was a playoff between Homa and Finau, right? And Eumanns had Finau and Homa.
Yeah. Kelly had Finau.
And Wes had Finau, too.
Finau gifted a playoff. Still couldn't get there.
Boy.
All right. Arnold Palmer this week at Bay Hill. You guys both hit the winner last year at Bay Hill.
Yes. Yes. I believe this was my... No, I hit Webb Simpson at Phoenix, and then my second outright of the season last year, Wes and I both hit Tyrrell Hatton at about 60-1.
Wow. All right. Mr. Man, what you got now?
Well, I'm going back to Hatton. He's at 18-1. Obviously, that number's been chopped. But you look at the top of the board, you've got Bryson DeChambeau, Rory McIlroy. Hatton's about the fifth choice or so, and you can find him as high as 18-1. That's the number I found. And the stats jump off the board. This guy now, Gil, and I know you have played Hatton in the past. You like him.
Yes.
He has ascended to the sixth-ranked player in the world.
He's very course-proof to me.
Like, he can't figure out Augusta yet, though.
Yeah, that's the one spot.
Yeah. But I'm on Hatton. I mean, the stats match up. An interesting stat here at Bay Hill. It has more approach shots of greater than 200 yards than any other course on tour, and it's by a long shot. Mm. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the par threes here are very long, well over 200 yards. Tyrrell Hatton ranks 10th on tour in approach shots over 200 yards. So I think that's a stat you have to look at. Guys that are accurate hitting the green from big distances like that. I also think there's a correlation here. It's an Arnold Palmer design, of course, Bay Hill. I think there's a correlation possibly with TPC Boston, which is a Palmer design. Shadow Creek here in Las Vegas, if you look at the CJ Cup last October, a lot of the guys on that leaderboard are the same guys you see here at Bay Hill. I think that is because it's heavy on ball striking and iron play. And then also TPC Twin Cities, where they play the 3M Open in Minnesota, another Palmer design. Louis Oosthuizen is a guy I took at 40-1 who's done very well at TPC Boston. He's also been progressively better in 2021. Finished 29th at Torrey Pines, finished 11th at Phoenix, and then was 6th last week at the Concession. So maybe it's time for Louis to hit the number one spot. Lanto Griffin, a longer shot, an Australian at 75-1. Really good young player. Hasn't missed a cut this year.
You love Lanto Griffin.
You know what? I said the wrong name. Cameron Davis is the Australian at 70-1. I am on Lanto Griffin as well. And he almost got there for me at Torrey Pines, but he's been playing very well. He was 7th at Shadow Creek back in October. Very good iron player, 24th in strokes gained approach on tour this year. Cameron Davis is the one I mentioned, the Australian. Australians have had very good success here, and I think that's because of the wind. Jason Day and Mark Leishman, former winners here. Davis 3rd at the Amex, 14th at Pebble, 29th at TPC RBC Boston last August. And then a bigger bomb, Emiliano Grillo, got him at 125-1. I've seen him down as low as 80-1. His stats are all over the place here. I mean, this guy has done well at every corollary course. He is absolutely a ball striker. The putter is always his shortcoming, but Bermuda grass is his preferred surface.
He is my Irvin Santana. Do you know what I mean by that? The guy who, whenever I bet on him, gets shelled.
Oh, okay.
And whenever I fade, he's like Cy Young.
He was a favorite last week in Puerto Rico and ended up finishing 11th. So I think the form is there, and I think this course should suit him.
And you have a bunch of top 10s or top 20s here as well that you're playing?
Yeah, basically just played all of these guys. I left Hatton off of the top 10 market, but Oosthuizen and the rest of them on down the list there, I played for top 20s. My final, I mentioned Hatton, Oosthuizen, Davis, Griffin, and Grillo, and then my final outright was Jason Kokrak, who's been a pretty popular play. He was a triple play, a consensus choice for the long shots crew, Humans, Reynolds, and myself, all on Jason Kokrak this week.
All right, and top 20s for the same guys, Oosthuizen, Kokrak, Davis, Griffin, and Grillo as well, all at plus money. Brady, appreciate it. One head-to-head to throw in real quick before the end?
Yeah, I bet Louis Oosthuizen over Jordan Spieth. I bet Ian Poulter over Brandon Todd. And I bet Emiliano Grillo over, gosh, who was it? Oh, Robert McIntyre, European Tour player.
Nicely done.
All right.
Brady, we look forward to the top of the hour.
See if we can get another winner.
Lombardi line coming up at the top of the hour. I will steal Michael Lombardi momentarily here. I've got some football questions for him as well. Right here on a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To a numbers game with Gil Alexander.
Don't settle in for the game until you've placed your one game parlay at BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Make your parlay selections within a single game from over 400 bet types. Log into your BetMGM account and place a one game parlay on NBA basketball and soccer with more sports coming soon. New to BetMGM, sign up and turn game day into payday with a one game parlay. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan disassociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and Virginia. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. In Tennessee, call or text the red line at 800-889-9789. And in Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Skill Alexander, our Sabalenka-Muguruza match has begun. Let's get it done. Over 22 on that one out there in Doha, Qatar. Little morning tennis action for you. He is the host of the Lombardi Line, which starts about 14 minutes from now here on the network. 12 noon Eastern, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific. Has his own podcast that he does with his buddy Adnan Virk. It's called the GM Shuffle, which is really Lombardi Unhinged. Lombardi Uncensored. You can follow him on Twitter at MLombardiNFL. It's the great Michael Lombardi. You would agree with that description, right?
Yeah, I mean, why hold back? You know, we recorded one today. There's so many subjects, and there's so much misinformation. I was reading a tweet today, Gil, that was in 2007. A reporter from the Boston Herald said that the trade between the Raiders and the Packers was intimate, that the Raiders were going to receive Aaron Rodgers in a conditional seventh-round pick for Randy Moss, Courtney Anderson, and a fourth round pick or something like that. And it was just waiting to be done. And it was so wrong that, you know, you just at some point you need to have some kind of a voice in the media that will call out the things that are just really wrong. And that's what I'm trying to do, really. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater to San Francisco, like that had no legs. Like that, first of all, Kyle Shanahan evaluated Teddy Bridgewater and came out of Louisville. He was at the 49ers. He was at the Browns. They didn't want him. So, like, why would he want him now? Like, it makes no sense.
It's an even bigger problem in baseball, Michael. Like, the baseball writers are really catty with each other. They're starting to call each other out because there are certain baseball writers that would rather be first than right. And that's really what you're talking about,
yeah,
right? That's the thing. Like, oh, I just got to get something out there.
There is, it's there's some sense of urgency. You know, Dak Prescott for Russell Wilson. I mean, seriously, does anybody pay attention? First of all, Dak Prescott's not even under contract. You can't trade him. Like, can we have a rumor that has something that's that has a little meat on the bone to it, you know, that's a little bit more pliable?
So help me out with this, because I have a whole bunch of J.J. Watt questions to ask you. I grew up in Washington, and me and my buddies are now in that mode where we're texting back, who do we want to be quarterback of the Washington football team? And I've kind of landed myself, I'll be honest with you, Michael, on Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, I'd love to see him as the quarterback of Washington, because I think the rest of the team, well, not the rest of the team, but the defense is certainly intact. If you can get somebody across from Terry McLaurin, then you've really got something going. There's some debate about that. You're like, really? You want Ryan Fitzpatrick? Who do you think would be the best fit for a team like Washington? Maybe Marcus Mariota. That's come up as well.
You know, I think Mariota, you would worry about longevity, durability, his ability to really play well in December and January after taking a lot of the hits. I think Mariota's a really good athlete that's playing the position of quarterback. Sometimes he just doesn't appear, especially in the North Turner, Scott Turner offense in Washington. I'm not sure that's really conducive for him. I think he's more of a West Coast thrower. So I could see Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think this, Gil, I think Washington's a team positioned itself that if they get any kind of adequate play at the quarterback position, that they have a chance to achieve to the next level. And here's where I think people make a huge mistake, and I've been working on this for my next book. Let's take Dan Marino as an example. Dan Marino aged as his rookie season. He entered in 1983. In 84, his second year in the NFL, he went to the Super Bowl. Wonderful. He lost that Super Bowl, never to return again. But what's more staggering about that is Don Shula, the winningest coach in NFL history, coached Dan Marino from the time he was 24 years old to the time he was 29 and never went to the playoffs. Like, is there a better player than Dan Marino? Have you watched a guy play quarterback better than Dan Marino?
I didn't remember that.
Coach of all time.
Yeah.
The best coach of all time, according to wins, I'm not saying he is the best coach, but the winningest coach of all time had a player who was one of the greatest players of all time in his prime from 24 to 29, and he didn't get to the playoffs. So my point to the story is we're making way too much out of, can the guy get us to the playoffs? Can the guy lead us there? Because if there's ever a player who could put him on your back, it's the same thing with Deshaun Watson. I love Deshaun Watson. Nobody's been higher than I have on Deshaun Watson. But at one player, he won four games for them. Their team was horrible. Now, you as a great player, you can win regular season games. Quarterback can carry you to regular season wins. They can't carry you into the playoffs.
This is what makes football so fascinating over other sports, right? Like, his basketball, look, talent, there's five guys on a court. If you have Michael Jordan, you're winning, period, right? Baseball, right. I said earlier on the show, it's a individual sport disguised as a team sport. But football, man, there's nothing like the marriage of 11 guys. And I always say this, and I can never prove this, and I know people go crazy when I say this, but I always say, if Peyton Manning were drafted by the Washington football team and had five or six different coordinators his first 6 years, he still would have been okay because he's Peyton Manning, but he never would have been the Peyton Manning we came to know. And I have no way of proving that, but that's the nature of football, right?
No, I think that's really valid. I mean, I take it in the new book that I'm writing now is I take it even with coaches. You know, when you look at Don Coryell's career, and you see that Don Coryell wrote a note. He was the head coach at San Diego State. He wrote a letter to Billy Bidwell to try to become the head coach. Bidwell made him the head coach. He went 5 years there. You as a Washington Redskin fan growing up, you know those Cardinal teams were really good.
Yeah.
You know, they went playoffs 3 of the 5 years. Bidwell wouldn't spend a nickel. He goes out to San Diego. Those Charger teams are great. You know, he's working for Gene Klein, who won't spend a nickel. Right? Could you imagine if Don Coryell worked for Jack Kent Cook?
Oh,
ask
man.
You, how would that have worked out?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, man, that's the answer. Oh, man. It's the same thing with players. Could you imagine if Peyton Manning would have gone somewhere that wasn't conducive? I think a lot of it is time and place. It's a little bit like Marty McFly when he went back into the future. You can't touch anything because you're going to mess it all up, right? You know?
It's a little
when
like
we
that,
ask
yes.
these questions, we're touching.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that that's where we miss the boat in football. And especially as a betting network, I think we have to take that into consideration deeper and deeper each game.
Yeah, we totally overreact in football to all kinds of things. There's no question. By the way, Jack Kent Cook didn't get Don Coryell, but he got the next best thing, his disciple Joe Gibbs, and we see how that worked out. Last thing before the J.J. Watt question. In all the free agent texts that we send, quarterback texts that we're sending back and forth, the one thing that we brought up was, isn't it interesting that no one ever mentions Tyrod Taylor? Like, Tyrod Taylor, who would have been the Chargers quarterback all year were it not for the team doctor puncturing his lung, and so we got Justin Herbert and a spectacular rookie season. No one brings him up. What does that say, you know, more in retrospect about Anthony Lynn? It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, you make your mind up. It's confirmation bias. I'm going to start Tyrod Taylor no matter what, without even evaluating, without even looking at the player that you're watching. I mean, it's truly a kind of a knock on quarterbacking evaluation. I mean, let's be real honest. Yeah. You know, we have five quarterbacks going to go in the first round. Do you think all five are going to be stars?
Of course not.
There's so many teams desperate for quarterback. Of course not. Yeah. But yet we have five going in there. Like, the key is to fit, not to draft a quarterback. The key is to get the right one. Okay. And I think your Tyrod Taylor point is so well taken.
Thank you. I want to get this J.J. Watt thing in before you run here. So he signs with the Cardinals, $31 million, 2 years, $23 million guaranteed. If I went to the Cardinals and I gave them my truth serum that I like to talk about with betting, but if I gave the Cardinals truth serum, and because Watt hasn't really been productive since, I mean, 2012, really? His signing, and I say to
he
the
had a good year in 18.
He did. 18, he had one,
you're right. 18, he had 16 sacks.
You're right.
He's had two seasons in the last five, Gil, that he's played 16 games.
Okay.
He's had one season where he's been dominant.
One dominant season. And if I said to the Cardinals, I said, look, you sign this guy, it's not going to move your season win total. Your futures odds will move only incrementally. What are you paying $30 million for then? Like, what would they say?
They would say, there's something about the Arizona Cardinals that I think they're convinced they're going to get a compensatory pick from the league if they sign a future Hall of Famer at the end of his career. Because they do it all the time. Edrin James, Alan Faneca, Emmitt Smith. I mean,
Kurt Warner. Somebody
must convince them that, yep. Kurt Warner, although he ended up playing well for them.
He did.
But at the end of the day, like, you're not watching Watt. Every time Watt's played, he played 900 plays in 18. The next year, he could only play eight games. Then last year, he's played over 1,000 plays. He's destined to get injured again. It's a ridiculous – one thing we learned about free agency, and you know this better than anybody because Dan Snyder violates this all the time.
Yes, I do.
You can't overpay for older players, especially older players on the decline.
Okay, and then the follow-up and the final question then is this. What does it say about J.J. Watt that's the team he picked? Not saying the Cardinals can't contend. They can, but it's not like they're the team on the doorstep. What does it say about him? And then broadly, more broadly than that, as fans and as bettors, do we underestimate how much players desire to win a Super Bowl is sometimes? Do we overestimate
that? They sell that, and then they take the coin. I mean, look, he said he went there for Murray. Did he watch Murray play?
Yeah.
Did he watch Murray that he averaged the last half of the season barely under 6 yards? How many games did he average under 5 yards per pass attempt? I mean, seriously, can we have an honest conversation about him as a passer? Or are we just going to go run around and talk and forget the games that he didn't throw the football in? He went there because of Murray? He didn't study the tape. Murray didn't play as well as you might have thought he did. You know, and so especially the last eight games of the season, he had three games of over 10 yards per attempt. Other than that, he was very pedestrian-like. I think J.J. took the money and run. And I don't believe, I know it for a fact with the Colts, I don't believe there was any other team in the $15 million range. When you pay $15 million for a player in 1 year, you're hoping to get a top five player at his position. That's not Watt.
100%. Michael, always fascinating. I appreciate the time, man.
Thank you, Gil.
Michael Lombardi, everybody, host of the Lombardi Line, top of the hour. Brady Cannon sitting in as the host today. Lombardi Line each and every Monday through Friday here exclusively on the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Good luck to all of you with all your bets. Let's get this Muguruza Sabalenka over in. From all of us at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Lombardi Line next.